Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, August the 23rd. Have you ever hired or maybe worked with a new graduate at your place of business who seemed to think he or she deserved to be making the same salary as you, or who thought making coffee was beneath him, or who thought she should be the vice president of the company with all the perks right out of the gate? Never heard of paying their dues, maybe not showing up on time or at all. And have you ever wondered to yourself, what's with kids today? Why do they feel so entitled? Well, this hour's for you, as well as for parents and anyone who cares about children learning to navigate in the real world. Our guest has written a new book about things kids aren't learning in school and should. He thinks schools today, and parents too, are too protective of kids, too worried about their self-esteem, and not teaching them that they will be faced with tough choices and disappointments and a world that is not fair. And that's one of the 50 rules kids won't learn in school, according to our guest. Life's not fair. Get used to it. We will talk with him about all of the rules, or as many as we can anyway, this hour, and we'll welcome yours too and your questions for him. He's Charlie Sykes, or Charles Sykes, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Charles Sykes is a radio and television talk show host at WTMJ in Milwaukee. He is also a senior fellow at the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute, the author of many books, including the just published 50 Rules Kids Won't Learn in School, Real World Antidotes to Feel-Good Education. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks for being here. I have 14 of these rules that have been attributed to Bill Gates, but they're yours, aren't they?
Yeah. I don't know how that happened. For about 10 years, those rules were circulating in the internet, always attributed to the billionaire founder of Microsoft, which I guess was a little bit flattering, but after a while got a little exasperating.
Yeah, well, he must have liked the one, be nice to nerds.
Well, that's the best theory I've heard about how it got attributed to Bill Gates. Be nice to nerds, you could end up working for them someday, we all could. And I guess people assume that since he is the most successful nerd of all time, he must have come up with that.
Yeah. But they are yours. They started as a radio list?
Actually, it was something I did for television here in Milwaukee, and I did 10 rules at the time, and they kind of expanded and then took on a life of their own. So for years I've been thinking about, okay, obviously there's something about these rules that people find interesting. Maybe I should expand it. Take the underlying philosophy, which is we need a reality check for kids, that we're not doing them a favor by teaching them that they're, you know, always special no matter what they do, that bubble wrapping them to, you know, insulate them from all of the symptoms of life. And so here we have the book today.
Yeah, and 50 of them. The number one, life is not fair, get used to it. That's something my mom used to say to me when I'd say that's not fair.
Yeah, well, as I point out, the average teenagers uses the phrase about 8.6 times a day, and they got it from their parents. They got it from us baby boomers.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, recognizing that life's not fair is the ultimate reality check. Now, that doesn't mean that you put up with unfairness or that unfairness is all right. What it is to say is that you can't control the fact that the world is unfair. What you can control is the way you react to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, so are you blaming the baby boomer parents for the attitudes of the kids today?
Yes. Yeah, no question about it. I was asked, you know, who do you blame for this? Do you blame, you know, society, schools, kids, or parents? And my answer is all of the above. I think there's a lot of blame for this attitude to go around.
Yeah. Well, do you think this stuff should be taught in school?
I think it should be taught. It should be taught as a life lesson. At one time, not that long ago, adults thought it was their responsibility to raise responsible, self-confident, independent kids who would be prepared to be competent adults. We thought that it was our responsibility to teach kids, okay, you know, here's wishful thinking and here's reality. And somehow we've lost track of that. And I think, I used the phrase before, the bubble wrapping, which is throughout the book, this notion somehow that if we bubble wrap children, that if we insulate them from the symptoms of life, the bruises, the frustrations, you know, nobody loses, everybody's a winner, everybody feels good about themselves no matter what, that we imagine that we're doing the kids a favor, but we're not. We're in effect setting them up to fail, and I think we're seeing that. And you mentioned in the workplace, and that's kind of a classic example, kids who find showing up at the workplace to be a huge shock when they realize that, hey, you know, my boss doesn't care about my self-esteem as much as mommy and daddy did. But also I think we're setting kids up with very unrealistic expectations about life, and a lot of them are experiencing a hard time making that transition.
We're talking with Charles Sykes, radio TV talk show host at WTMJ in Milwaukee. He's also the author of the just published 50 Rules Kids Won't Learn in School. And we will talk about more of them after we check the weather. And we'll welcome your questions and your thoughts and maybe your own rules. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're tuned to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you with us. Hope you stay tuned. It's 17 minutes past 7 o'clock. This afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. Coming up after 4 o'clock, Ben continues his series of interviews with candidates running for president. Today, it's Congressman Tom Tancredo. He'll discuss his campaign for the Republican presidential nomination. That's after 4 this afternoon. We're talking with Charles Sykes. He is a radio and TV host at WTMJ in Milwaukee. He is the author of 50 Rules Kids Won't Learn in School, Real World Antidotes to Feel-Good Education, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. One of the rules, the real world won't care as much as your school does about your self-esteem. It will expect you to accomplish something before you feel good about yourself. What do you think of that? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Charlie Sykes, why do you think, give us some examples of how schools care so much about kids' self-esteem.
Well, I think, you know, whether it's the great inflation, the elimination of valedictorians because you don't want anybody to feel bad. I have an anecdote in the book about some Madison educators who are concerned about the impact of red ink.
I remember that.
Red ink, you might remember the controversy, that using red ink on kids' papers might be too traumatic for kids. You know, I do quote an article called A Nation of Wimps from Psychology Today, but that's pretty much a classic, that if you really obsess about red ink on kids' papers, then you must think that they are awfully frail, that they are awfully easily damaged. And obviously, you know, getting rid of red pens makes perfect sense to somebody who thinks it's worse to mark a kid's paper with red than it is for the child to become an adult who can't write a coherent sentence. I mean, at some point you need to step back and say, okay, so we use purple pens. Will that make them feel better? Won't purple pens affect their self-esteem? Are we really afraid to correct children? Have we gotten to the point where, and I guess at some point, if you become, and I think that the pendulum is shifting on this, if you become obsessed with self-esteem, and of course we all want kids to feel good about themselves, but you also want to actually instill the skills that will breed genuine self-esteem, the confidence that will build genuine self-esteem. Otherwise, you have this inflated sense of I'm perfect, I'm wonderful the way I am, and guess what? You're going to hit reality like a brick wall, either when you get to college and find out you're not as special as you've been told your whole life, or when you get into the world, you have all these gold stars, all these happy faces, all these meaningless trophies, and suddenly you realize, geez, you know, maybe everybody is not going to be quite as concerned about me feeling good as I thought.
Yeah. We have tons of callers, and Don in Wisconsin Rapids is with us first. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Joy. Thanks for taking my call. Mr. Sykes, it's an honor to talk to you. I read your first book, Dumbing Down America, and that was the wonderful eye-opener to me. And I think I'm a teacher in a tech school. Basically, I taught public school for a while. I think we're so concerned about not offending these kids, and I don't think there's much the school system can do. It has to start at home. And the way I was brought up, my dad used to say when I turned 18, he said, Dad, I'm going to be 18 pretty soon. I can do what I want. He said, you'll be 18 when I tell you you're 18. and that's basically we don't have that attitude anymore. And I try to bring that up by my son like that. I think if you do stuff like that today, they're going to call it abuse.
Well, you know, you mentioned that it starts at home, and the book that you cited, Dumbing Down Our Kids, really did focus on the schools. And over the years, I think I've come to appreciate the point you just made, that we ask a lot of schools, but it's not as if we have parents who are pushing schools to push the kids. In fact, a lot of this bubble wrapping of kids, I think it takes place, you know, at home. And the kids show up, and honestly, any teacher will tell you, especially college teachers, will tell you the sense of entitlement that I deserve an A, and if you don't get an A, they will complain. And even worse, they'll bring in the helicopter parents, and the helicopter parents will come in to send, and they will start complaining that their, you know, special kid did not get all of the gold stars and the high grades from the teachers. So the educational system has to deal with the consequences of a generation of kids that does have this sense of entitlement.
Yeah. So why do you think the baby boomer parents are hovering over their children like this and becoming these helicopter parents?
Okay, now first of all, I admit I am a baby boomer.
And are you a helicopter parent?
Well, you know what? Later today, I'm taking my older son off to college. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be ironic if I turned out to be one? No. I guess we were the most doted and pampered generation in history. Now we're parents. So we never went through a Great Depression. We didn't fight in a major war. So we didn't feel the pressure to raise a generation of tough, independent, self-reliant kids. We wanted to be their buddies. We wanted to be cool. And so we became the super parents, and that morphed into the helicopter parents who micromanage every aspect of our kids' lives and just won't let them grow up.
Yeah. Thanks, Don, for the call. Marshall in Stoughton is next. Hi, Marshall. Marshall, are you at your telephone? No, he's not. So we will move on then to, oops, wait a minute here. I have to make sure I can get somebody on. I'll go to Tom in Wausau. I'm sorry. Tim, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Karen. Hi, this is Tim in Wausau. Charlie Sykes, I'm from Milwaukee. I used to teach school down there on and off, and also Normal Bloomington. And when I first got a job on the railroad in 1974, I was making just as much as the person that was there for 40 years because I did the same job for the same pay. The children coming into the workforce now, I don't think they're prepared for that. I mean, I've had young conductors work with me as an engineer, and it's like they're totally lost. Some of them just basically sleep all day. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, are you talking about the fact that kids are not prepared for the fact that you have to show up every day, 5 days a week, work 8 days, life is not divided into semesters? Well,
yeah.
I mean, you know, again, that kind of lifestyle, it does turn out to be kind of a shock. I mean, if you have this entitled, spoiled generation of kids who feel so good about themselves, they meet a job where something's actually expected of them. Boy, it's kind of a clash of worlds. And we are seeing this epidemic of graduates who have a tough time making this transition to the work world, the employers. And you could devote it, you know, show after show to what employers have to deal with, having to cope with a generation that lacks those basic skills, but also expect their bosses somehow to be as accommodating as mommy and daddy have been over the last 18 years. I mean, they want it now. They want it all. And unfortunately, a lot of kids are not willing to make the sacrifices that requires because, quite frankly, we've never told them that, yes, you can be many, many things, but you know what? You're going to have to work very hard, and it's not always going to be fun, and you are going to have to learn how to cope with disappointment and maybe bosses who are demanding of you.
Yeah. One of the things that I'm dealing with newer staff at Wisconsin Public Radio is, names will not be named here, that everybody loves to hear you're doing a good job, but I don't hear enough feedback from you. I don't hear enough positive feedback from you. I need you to tell me what a great job I'm doing.
Well, yeah, because you understand that, mm-hmm. that this is what they've come to expect, mm-hmm. starting from the home and the schools. And the flip side of that is, what happens the first time somebody calls them in and says, I'm sorry, I'm disappointed in your performance. I'm sorry, that's not adequate. I'm sorry, you can't dress like that. I'm sorry, you can't, you know, use that those kinds of language. The boss has to cope with the possibility that this is the first time that somebody has told somebody no, that has gotten in their face. Now, of course, I am generalizing, and I understand that I'm generalizing, but this is part of the reality of dealing with what's been called Generation Me.
Now we'll go to Marshall in Stoughton. Are you there, Marshall?
Yes.
Good.
I work as a physics professor at UW-Madison, and I have to say that there's a big difference between the science students that I teach and the people that you're describing. Mm-hmm. Any idea why?
Yeah, I do think, and this is part of the kind of two Americas that we have, because the science kids have kind of self-selected. I mean, if they're taking physics courses in college, they've had to get it right. Right. I mean, there are certain professions where you have to get it right, and there are certain fields where you just have to feel good about it. In the sciences, at some point, somebody has said, okay, you know, you're not going to get through this unless you've mastered these skills. So there is a certain amount of, I think, work ethic. There's a certain amount of expectations and recognizing that it's not about how you feel about it. It's whether or not you understand what these rules and laws are.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Well, so how far do we go with this, Charlie Sykes? Are you looking for the days when, I don't know, teachers never intervened when the bullies were calling kids four eyes, or we used to have the days of, what was that, like playing dodgeball, where you would be picked last on the team and you know, a lot of people's feelings were hurt? Are you calling for that kind of stuff to come back?
You could come up with a lot worse things than that, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, like, for example, you know, being called four eyes. If you believe that the teacher will always be there to protect a kid, maybe. But the reality is, and this is part of the deal, you grow up, you're going to have to deal with some of that stuff. You're going to have to cope with it. Anybody who grew up kind of understood that other kids can be hard on other kids. Now, I'm not saying this is a good thing. I'm saying, though, that do understand that kids can deal with it. Now, as somebody who was often picked last for the athletic team.
Well, guess why I brought it up. No.
Okay, all right. Well, you know the feeling, you know. Not fun. But at some point, you also realize that kids who are picked last at, for example, the dodgeball thing, decide to become good at something else. And, you know, whether it's to become a talk show host or an author or something else, there are other things that we do. We cannot insulate kids from all of those disappointments. There's just no way to do it. There's just no way to say that, you know, we're gonna prepare you for life, but we're gonna make sure that you don't have any of the, you know, scratches, bumps, bruises of growing up. That just can't be happening. I mean, we can't insulate children from life. Now, on the other hand, that doesn't mean that we encourage nastiness or anything. But it's also, I mean, you remember the old phrase, and this will sound really old-fashioned, that sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me.
Sure.
We've now flipped all the way to the other side of it. Oh, my goodness, if a child is called four eyes, how will they possibly be able to cope with this trauma? Mm-hmm. Well, at some point, you know, the kids who are the most self-reliant are going to figure out a way to be able to handle that and turn it to their advantage.
Jim and Superior, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I don't remember how many years ago it's been, but when I first started hearing about these communities that were going to not keep score during sporting events, I thought, oh my gosh, it's just going to go downhill from here.
Yeah, only 30 seconds before a news break.
Yeah, that's exactly, and I have a rule that specifically deals with that kind of thing. Of course, the irony is that the kids always keep score, even if the grown-ups think that it's too stressful for them.
Charles Sykes is our guest. He is author of the new book, 50 Rules Kids Won't Learn in School, Real World Antidotes to Feel-Good Education. 1-800-642-1234, our toll-free number if you'd like to join in with one of your own rules or a question for our guest. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine at 7:36 on this Thursday, August the 23rd. Good to have you with us, and hope you join in as we continue talking with Charles Sykes, who is the author of many books, including the new book, 50 Rules Kids Won't Learn in School, Real-World Antidotes to Feel-Good Education, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. Back to the phones we go. Matthew in Oshkosh. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I work in IT, and I'm a Generation X. I work with a bunch of other X and Y. And one thing I've noticed about a lot of the new kids coming into IT is they have you know, a decent concept of their area, but you know, they're put on projects and stuff where they have to manage, you know, more than just their area, and they don't really seem to have a desire to learn the whole technology, and so they're just doing their own thing, and they're making decisions without really seeing how it affects other parts of the organization. I just think that's, you know, something that is interesting to deal with in the workforce.
Yeah. Is there a rule for these people, Charlie Sykes?
Not specifically. Mm-hmm. I find IT to be incredibly mysterious, and it's way outside my area of competence to comment on what people in IT. I just ask them to do stuff and hope that they get it right.
Jordan in Kenosha, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I was a military recruiter about 10 years ago, and I was called in to speak to students that were taking vocational classes and whatnot, and it just so happened that I heard these 10 rules on Paul Harvey going into the school that day, and I drive and I'm writing them down. Well, I used them in my spiel in my presentation, and the teachers looked at me like I was crazy. They were like, "This is the best thing since sliced cheese." And by the end of the day, I had seen probably 17 or 18 classes that day.
But the teachers appreciated this, Jordan?
Oh, very much. Mm-hmm. They thought this was great stuff, and you know, I was in bewilderment that they weren't putting this out to students.
Well, I appreciate that. It's very flattering. Yeah, Paul Harvey actually did devote one of his commentaries. I think he gave Bill Gates credit. I'm not sure, but that's okay. And I think the story you're telling is kind of interesting because I think it's people who worked with young people, guidance counselors, teachers, people like the caller, who found the rules the most valuable and began circulating them and posting them. And I found them on a lot of educational websites. And I think the part of it was, as the caller described, you know, the schools of education are so filled with sort of the feel good, don't say these things, you know, let's make sure we emphasize self-esteem, that when these rules began popping up and people say, okay, look, let's have a reality check. Let's have an antidote to all of this bubble wrapping, this coddling, this soft America type approach. People went, boy, this is kind of a culture shock, but it makes sense.
Yeah. Thanks, Jordan, for the call. Here's one of the rules. You're not going to the NBA, so hold off on the bling and spare us the attitude. And you cannot be everything you dream. Why not tell kids to reach for the stars, Charles Sykes?
Okay, now, first of all, the first one, the one on the NBA, that's encourages kids to do the math, that I think you have something like a 3 out of 10,000 chance to get into the NBA, and there's all this, I think a lot of people have very unrealistic expectations about that. Now, that rule number 6 probably sounds the harshest of almost all the rules. No, you cannot be everything you dream, but then the rest of the sentence reads, unless you have the talent, the education, mm-hmm. the commitment to work for it. And the point here is that, you know what, if you dream of being a doctor, guess what, you're going to have to do your homework. You're going to have to learn science. If you want to be a business executive, you might have to actually learn math. I mean, there are certain realities. I mean, the choices are nearly infinite. I mean, infinite for kids. There are no social class limits. There's no caste systems. But kids who skip their courses in biology and chemistry and don't do their homework, if they think they're going to grow up to be a heart surgeon, guess what? Get used to disappointment.
Yeah. David in South Milwaukee. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. I'd like to play the role of the lone dissenter here. This Mr. Sykes, excellent communicator, but I think what we're doing here is we may be mixing some very good parenting advice, which is always nice to say, really essential to get these intersections with reality for children. The age-old problem of today's teenagers are the worst than ever, and I think that theory started about 2,000 years ago, and we need to keep that in mind. I'm involved. I have a young high school student. I'm involved with the schools. I see so many wonderful, hardworking, high-achieving students that suffer from none of the maladies that are being listed here, and I think we all do. You know, we're all above-average drivers, of course, and we all know, there's always these horrible anecdotes that we can share, but the fact is the world that I live in is populated with this really neat kids. And do problems exist occasionally? Sure, because that's life on Earth. And I'll start my own list. But there's no data here. It's simply entertainment. And
Well, that's by the way not true. This is ridiculous. Well, okay, let me start. I was about to say I agreed with almost everything he said until the end, and the fact is there's lots of data and there's lots of research indicating that the attitudes have changed, the educational performance has changed. The book, I mean, we don't have time to go through all of it, but there is a lot of data showing the changes, whether you're looking at it in terms of test scores, whether you're looking at it in terms of the reactions of people in college or the workforce, but what they're seeing. But 2 points. Number one, and I expect to hear this, people saying that, well, doesn't every generation say these kids these days? And the answer is yes. But that doesn't mean that we aren't seeing a shift. And there's no question about it. There has been a real cultural shift in the way parents parent and the way we treat young people, the way we raise young people and the expectations. There is a difference, and I do think it's legitimate to talk about those. Secondly, the caller is absolutely right. There are some great kids out there, and that's why I talk about the two Americas when it comes to this. I mean, we have... One America teaches kids responsibility, self-control, and accountability. I mean, the other America is the one that files lawsuits if your kid gets kicked off the cheerleading squad and obsesses about dodgeball and things like using red ink. So, yeah, it doesn't necessarily apply to everybody, but there is part of our culture that I think does need this kind of a wake-up call.
Thank you, David, for the call. Ariana in Green Bay is with us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, actually, I just like to ask Charlie regarding his opinion, because I get together with different people from different backgrounds, and we did not grow up here, so we have no background regarding the educational system here. We can only compare it to what we grew up with. And these comments come from people that are European, Latin American. One thing we have noticed is the lack of basic skills. Our experience has been with middle school kids and high school kids, and this lack of basic skills is regarding manners and a lack of attention in general, what we have observed to when they are in classes, to what the teacher is saying, or to what to have certain respect during the class in order to continue and have everybody... you know, have this attention focus on what they're supposed to be doing. Another one we have observed is at homes. We notice that the new generations also, I'm not saying all of the kids, but it is a generic description of what we have observed and coming from our different backgrounds. Kids would come to the household and would come in by themselves, did not greet maybe the adult members, get to their room, share the time, get to their refrigerator, and then just get out of the house as soon as they can and without any regard of anybody who was a member of the household.
Ariana, these are your kids' friends that are doing this? Is that what you're saying?
No, actually, I don't have even kids that age. This is people that we have observed.
Oh, so you're seeing the kids do this. What about this a lack of respect and bad manners?
Oh, no, I know exactly what Ariana is talking about. I have one of the rules is look people in the eye when you meet them. These are all pet peeves that I happen to have as well. And you mentioned just the politeness. I think in part it's because we are such a child-centered society that at one point, I mean, again, I know this may sound old-fashioned, but that we expected that children would conform themselves to adult rules, that children would show respect to adults. We now are such a child-worshipping society that too many children, not all children, because I know some very polite children, too many children honestly believe that they are the center of the universe, and they have never been taught those manners. They don't look you in the eye. Adults are almost invisible to them because the adults have abdicated their responsibility to be the grown-ups. And whether you're a parent like Ariana or teachers, and again, I really feel for what it must be like to be in the classroom with many of these kids who really have never been told no, who honestly believe that they are entitled to whatever they want. This is a real challenge, and I know that teachers are really struggling with this these days.
Our guest is Charles Sykes, or Charlie Sykes. You may know him as a host at radio host, TV host at WTMJ in Milwaukee. Senior fellow at the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute, author of 5 previous books, and his very latest, 50 Rules Kids Won't Learn in School, Real World Antidotes to Feel-Good Education. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 12 minutes before 8 o'clock. Coming up after 8, many are concerned about the construction of what's being called a NAFTA superhighway, which would run from Mexico through the U.S. into Canada, and that this was going to be the first step in merging the three North American countries into a union. Well, we'll talk with a guest coming up after 8 o'clock who says this superhighway is just a myth. So we'll wonder what you think about that coming up after 8 o'clock. Talking with Charlie Sykes this hour about his new book, 50 Rules Kids Won't Learn in School. And our next caller is Chris in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I've got a couple of rules. It's not what you know, it's who you know. If you can't be born to the right people, at least marry the right people. Make sure you're the right color and the right gender. If you follow all the rules, you can probably get away without even being able to say nuclear and still be the leader of the world. And as far as life isn't fair, it's a lot more fair in first world countries like they have in Northern Europe than in third world countries like they have here.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think of that, Charlie Sykes?
I would strongly encourage her to write her own book.
How about that? Yeah, that's right. Life's not fair, especially if you're a minority person or a female. That maybe these rules needed to be adjusted a little bit to make life fairer for all of us.
Well, I also have a rule saying you're not a victim. And the fact that on any given day, something like 84% of the population could claim that they are a victim in some way, that they are oppressed or treated badly. And what I suggest is that perhaps there's advantage to claiming you're a victim because, of course, you have that moral superiority. You're never to blame. You're never responsible. On the other hand, once you embrace that victim status, you're also linked to the victim status. And I encourage people not to begin.
One of the rules, you're offended? So what? No, really, so what? So we should offend kids today?
No. It's the people who wake up in the morning locked and loaded waiting to be offended by something. And the reality is that, in modern life, you are going to hear things and see things that you don't like. So the question is, again, how you respond to it. Now, by the way, that's not an excuse to go out and offend people. But what I'm saying is, look, the willingness to be offended at the smallest slight, I'm offended by being called Four Eyes, and by the way, I am a Four Eyes. Mm-hmm. That's not a sign of a superior consciousness. It's a decision to be a whiner and an emotional bully. I mean, we live in a free country. You're not going to be free from annoyance. You're not going to be immune to things that offend you. And it doesn't give you the license to silence or harass people you disagree with. And what I suggest is if you really want to avoid being offended, you probably should enter a Buddhist monastery rather than ride public transportation or go to a modern university or be on a talk show.
Yeah. What do we do, Charlie Sykes, about these kids who commit suicide or walk to school with a gun because they feel they've been offended and bullied and harassed and picked on?
Oh, well, I mean, there's, of course, the common sense is, there's the normal growing up, and then there are the kids, and we need to pay very, very close attention to them. I mean, I'm certainly not arguing that you do not show attention or compassion to people who, in fact, are in real pain. And I think that's something that, we have to strike the right balance on.
Darlene in Marshfield is with us. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. We have, daily as an educator, we run into probably 150 different personalities, and along with that, we would have two parents for each of those personalities, and we have a monumental task of distinguishing who is a very sensitive person and who is not or able to handle the rules of your book. What suggestion would you give for educators who are faced with a parent or somebody who is asking, why are you using so much red ink on my son's paper?
Good luck. Hopefully you could sit down with them and say, because I'm using the red ink because I'm trying to get their attention, because I'm trying to actually teach them something. And whatever the stress of the red ink might be today, I am trying to protect them from the stress and the disappointment and the humiliation later in life, in high school, in college, or in the work world, for not getting things right. I'm actually trying to get their attention. I'm trying to raise them to be competent adults. Now, whether or not that will work, I cannot tell you. But at least you ought to try.
Yeah. Thanks, Darlene. Good luck. Jody and Wanakee. Jody and Wanakee is next. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I went to Memorial on the west side of Madison as a new student in my freshman year and was immediately set upon by bullies. No big deal. I'm big enough to handle myself, so it wasn't really a major concern. But what was a major concern for me was my at-risk status. I found myself in a SWS program and was immediately just shocked and appalled at the behaviors that I saw that were allowed to go on in the classrooms. You know, I complained to Dr. Taylor, our main school principal, some of the under principals, the coordinator of the SWS program.
I don't know what this is, Jody, an SWS. I can't understand what that means.
SWS is a school within a school. Okay. A program that was developed for children who were at risk of dropping out.
Yeah, and so I'm sorry, what's your point then, Jody?
Well, my point then is, you know, as a child 16 years ago, I looked to the faculty members of the school to, you know, run the program clean and make sure that, you know, threats did not happen in the classroom. I went to faculty members, you know, from the SWS program coordinator all the way up to the school principals in the main office, and nobody ever did anything about anything that I complained about. So I ultimately did wind up dropping out of school because it was easier for me to be a teen father and work full time than it was to stay in school and attempt to get my diploma at the time.
I don't know really what if you have anything to say about that.
The point is, though, that the reason you want to have strong discipline in schools is to create that safe environment. And unfortunately, I do think that there are too many cases where the inmates run the asylum, where the kids, in fact, are given too much power and authority. Maybe that's sort of what he was getting at there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the other hand, we do apparently have a hard time distinguishing between really strict, reasonable discipline and, on the one hand, and the zero-tolerance policies, which result in all kinds of absurd overreactions on the other hand. And I talk about that in the book as well.
Yeah. Brian in Green Bay, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to respond to the earlier caller who said, you know, there's all these wonderful teenagers out there. And I agree that there are an awful lot of them, but I also know some that I think they're nice kids, but when faced with the challenge of making change, if they're standing behind a cash register, fail. And I think that is an indication that we have failed them, parents, and probably parents more than anyone, but also the teachers. We need to set our expectations high enough that they can be successful.
Well, I agree exactly. And that's the classic example, of course, is the teenager, somebody who has gone through all of these years of education, and yet when they are faced with, I mean, if you want to see real confusion, when one of those cash registers stops working and they have to do the math themselves, and then you realize, okay, what's wrong here? You know, where did we fail? Can you really blame the kid for that? Or what was the responsibility of the school and the parents to prepare the kid, the child, to be able to cope with all of these, to cope with the unexpected, to cope with these kinds of challenges.
And Kathy and Nina is with us now. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. It goes along with what the gentleman just said. I believe it starts at home. You know, I have a child that's going to turn 18 on Saturday. She's going to college next week, and she is prepared. I totally believe in raising my children not as millennium children. My 10-year-old knows how to put clothes in the washer and the dryer. You know, when there were issues with the older one when she was in parochial school, I went to school with her, and I sat there the whole entire day. Well, you know, what's going on? I didn't leave, you know, it wasn't left up to a teacher to have to figure out. And we figured it out. And, you know, she wanted to go to a bigger high school. I said, fine, you know, we'll take you out of the parochial. You can go to the public high school. But once your grades go below a 3.5, you're right back where you were, you know. You know, I set standards for them. And I truly believe, you know, her having a job, She wanted more than what I could provide. Her grandfather was going to give her a car, and I made her pay for it.
Mm-hmm. And so what you've done is you've raised an independent, confident young person who, when she goes off to college, will be able to take responsibility for the decisions and the challenges she'll face. You don't need to be there with the eternal umbilical cord of the cell phone micromanaging her life, because you've actually raised her to be an independent adult.
Congratulations, Kathy, and congratulations, Charlie Sykes. You're getting your son off to college today, you say?
Yes.
All right. Well,
later tonight.
Thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, Joy, it's been a pleasure. Right. Thank you.
Charles Sykes, he is a radio host, a TV host at WTMJ in Milwaukee, senior fellow at the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute, author of several books, including the just published 50 Rules Kids Won't Learn in School. Thanks to Carmen Jackson for producing the hour. Thanks to Karen Prager for on-air production. Thank you for listening and for calling in. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
WPR.org has lots of great features for you to use. If you'd like to give feedback about this program or others, log on to WPR.org and click on Listener Feedback. Thank you for listening to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Have you missed a chapter? Want to catch up on the book? The 5 most recent episodes of Chapter a Day are always available on the web at wpr.org/webcasting. You'll never have to wonder what happened again. I hope you can join us for Chapter a Day at 12:30 and 11 each evening on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Checking the weather forecast for today, it's going to be a rainy, warm, and humid day. Severe storms, heavy rains likely, a high today of 85. Flash flood watch remains in effect for today, tonight, and tomorrow. More storms tonight and tomorrow. High temperatures tomorrow, 75.